This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Berkeley Life Nitric Oxide Support Supplements. Nitric oxide is a vital signaling molecule in cardiovascular health. We all make nitric oxide in our bodies, but as we age, it starts to diminish naturally. Being proactive in maintaining nitric oxide levels is vital for healthful aging because an underperforming cardiovascular system will limit the effectiveness of any other supplementation in your regimen. Just two capsules of Berkeley Life daily provides the dietary nitrate equivalent of 7 ounces of beets and can support energy levels, maintain healthy blood pressure levels, and improve general circulation. It's the professional-grade nitric oxide supplement that I recommend and prescribe for my patients. This is only available from healthcare providers. To get your Berkeley Life professional supplements, just go to drhoffman.com/Berkeley Life. That's drhoffman.com/Berkeley Life. You can also get Berkeley Life's patented nitric oxide test strips to conveniently test your own nitric oxide levels safely and easily at home. That's drhoffman.com/Berkeley Life for Berkeley Life nitric oxide supplements. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Our guest, Dr. Lauren Marks. He has a very, very active practice here in New York City as a functional medicine specialist, and he's treated a wide variety of patients during his long career. He's one of my respected colleagues in this New York City community, and we're brainstorming on COVID-19. You know, what are some plausible nutritional strategies? Is nutrition even relevant to the problem of COVID-19? And in part one, I think pretty much we have demonstrated that it can play a major role, not necessarily in forming a impregnable barrier against the virus. Some of us are going to get sick, but our outcomes may be dependent on our nutritional status. You know, macronutrients, you know, make us fat, make us inflamed, and these micronutrients can be very, very important in terms of building up our defenses and reducing our susceptibility to catastrophic downturns, such as our putting people in the intensive care unit and killing people here. So we're talking about another nutrient that shows promise here, which is N-acetylcysteine. And by the way, I'm going to share with you something that I just read. There is a condition, it's a genetic condition, and that condition is G6PD deficiency. And, you know, what's interesting is that it's pretty common in countries that took it on the chin. These Mediterranean countries like Spain and Italy, about 10% of the population has G6PD deficiency. And it renders you more susceptible to the bad consequences of the virus. And lo and behold, they did a little experiment. They said, let's try giving an antioxidant. It was a test tube experiment, but the antioxidant was applied to the cell cultures that were being infected with the virus. And what was that antioxidant? One that we're pretty familiar with. It was alpha lipoic acid. And they actually found that alpha lipoic acid protected lung tissue, the cell culture of lung tissue, from damage by coronavirus. So, well, interesting stuff.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, so we were discussing the
related nutrient,
NAC or N-acetylcysteine, which is a sulfur-bearing amino acid that is the precursor, if you take it in supplemental form, to the manufacture of glutathione, which is the master antioxidant or the preeminent intracellular antioxidant that exists within our bodies. And one of the beautiful things about NAC, above and beyond its antioxidant capacity, is that it happens to also be a mucolytic. And that means it takes mucus and it thins it out. So whether you're having, a regular upper respiratory infection, whether you have COPD, whether you have cystic fibrosis, or whether you have a COVID-19 infection, N-acetylcysteine is a very important supplement at this juncture.
And the neat thing is that it's available in hospitals, because I remember way back when we used to have in the hospital formularies, because it's the antidote to Tylenol overdose.
Right.
Which is not a great way to kill yourself, because there is an antidote. It's more, you know, good for a suicidal gesture if you want to get people, a lot of people excited about, you know, you taking your life, but survive, because you'll be resuscitated in a hospital if they get you there in time with NAC. They also use it to clear lungs. It's something called mucomist. They put it in nebulizers, or, you know, they have people inhale it to break up the mucus in people's lungs. So they're already using this. This, I mean, look, as long as it's on the hospital formulary, they're okay.
Right.
You know, elderberry, you know, oregano. I mean, these are a little, you know,
right,
bridge too far.
It's interesting. I have not yet heard of anyone in a hospital setting, and maybe that's just me, but I have not heard, I've not seen anything in the reports or in the literature about the implication of using nebulized NAC in the hospital setting for these patients, and I ask myself why.
Yep, and or glutathione, you know, which I've used clinically. I've used, you know, the pure glutathione for patients with lung disease, and it seems to work. Yeah, I mean, but they're giving it to patients nonetheless. They're throwing the kitchen sink at a lot of these patients. They're giving them zinc, from what I understand. They're giving them some intravenous vitamin C, not that much, not to our satisfaction, but they're using some of these nutritional protocols and even vitamin D. And, you know, thanks to your good friend Dr. Mullen down there at Johns Hopkins, you know, they're going to give it more consideration. So, you know, let's just back up a little bit, you know, because we're talking, we have more time, we can talk about, you know, some specific nutrients that are in the armamentarium against viruses, but, you know, just this concept of metabolic fitness, you know, like, resilience, what actually constitutes metabolic fitness? I mean, so for example, you know, what are you doing, on your own? What are you counseling to your patients to sort of gird themselves against, coronavirus?
Mm-hmm. Well, I wrote a couple of blogs and I sent them out to people. And, you know, I mean, as an absolute baseline template, I want everybody being on, I mean, I want everybody being on vitamin D. I want them to be on vitamin C. I want them to be taking, V, D, C. And I'm telling them that they need to get away from the sugars, because it's really easy right now. Like, as you pointed out from the beginning, it's like, oh, you know, just take some comfort food. You're at home. You don't feel good. You know, you're stressed out about everything. And that's probably one of the worst things that you can do.
Yeah. Just get a gallon of ice cream and, you know, and knock yourself out.
And
chocolate chip would be my choice.
You know,
I haven't indulged.
And so, yeah. And so people need to know that, the food you eat has a direct impact upon the level of inflammation that you possess, and the state and the health of your microbiome. So when we talk about metabolic fitness, you cannot leave out the gut health from that equation.
Right.
And gut, and so the food you eat is the substrate or the material that is necessary for building a healthy microbiome, which is all the bacteria that exist within your body. And I say your body because even though the preponderance of it is in the digestive system, it's in your sinus cavities, it's in your vagina.
It's actually in the lung. They actually thought that the lungs were sterile, but there is a microbiome actually deep within the lung. You know, so there, that may be a determinant of, you know, how resistant you are to disease.
There is, and actually I was going to talk about that because...
Oh, jump the gun, I'm sorry.
You know, there is something called the gut lung axis, and I was surprised.
Wow.
Yeah, and you know, there are many axes that
I've heard of the gut brain axis. Yeah, we know
right,
about that.
Gut brain axis is the HPA axis, the HPT axis, and so forth. But now there was a research paper written in actually 2017, and that wrote exactly about this. And I just wanted to give you a reference on that. If you'll bear with me 1 second, I will find it.
I want the exact volume and page of the medical. I need that. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, there it is. Hold on. It's coming up right now. Okay, so this was, Frontiers in Microbiology, Microbial Symbiosis, and... This was a review article of September 19th, 2018, and it says Diet, Microbiota, and Gut-Lung Connection.
Wow.
And they go on, and they go on to express an understanding of the relationship. And they and so, you know, you look at it and you say, well, how does A get to B? And they said that the mechanism is a fewfold. One is is that through microaspiration, we're getting some.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting it through lymphatics, and you're getting it through...
Just back up a little bit. This aspiration, I mean, we were taught in medical school that the worst thing that could happen to a patient is don't let them aspirate, because that means that the food's going down the wrong tube. You know, that instead of going into your lungs, instead of going down your esophagus, it goes down your larynx into your trachea, and then that can set the stage for a horrible lung infection. But what you're saying is that inadvertently, I mean, healthy individuals actually have a little inoculation, very fine mist, perhaps, of certain flora into their trachea and perhaps deeper into their lungs. That's fascinating.
Right.
I didn't realize. So it's not an all or nothing thing. You actually want a healthy aspiration.
Correct. You want a healthy aspiration. And the composition of the microorganisms that live within your gut are contributory. And one of the other ways that they are showing the relationship that this truly exists as an axis is that they studied people that had known lung diseases,
mm-hmm.
who have COPD, that have cystic fibrosis and so forth. And they looked at the microbiome of those patients.
In the intestines?
In their intestines, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
the microbiome of the gut.
Yep.
And they looked at the relationship of those subset of patients that have those lung diseases to what's going on in the gut,
mm-hmm.
and the alteration of those and how there were changes, right? So, for instance, we know if you give too many antibiotics to very young children, that they can develop and become asthmatics later in life.
Yep.
Right? So there's a perfect introduction into that process. But what's happening is that you're getting translocation, right? So people who have poor gut health tend to have a breakdown in the lining of their intestine, which creates what's called hyperpermeability, or otherwise known as leaky gut. And so right there you have, instead of a normal defense barrier saying, okay, you're a good guy, you're a nutrient, you're a digested food, you can come through, they're saying, okay, but now if you have greater porosity. You're allowed to let bacteria and viruses and
endotoxins, nasty substances that are made,
right, to go through. And this contributes to both the chronic inflammatory state of the person. And then we now know that it goes to target organs,
mm-hmm.
that it's not just located within the confines of the gut, where we were all taught that the gut consists of the mouth all the way through the anus, and that it's a closed system. Yes,
or as Dr. Alessio Fasano coined a wonderful meme, which is what happens in the gut doesn't necessarily stay in the gut.
Yeah, exactly.
I will never forget that, because it really encapsulates what you've just talked about.
It's perfect. So, yeah. So there is a gut-lung axis, but you're not treating the lung, you're treating the gut.
Mm-hmm.
And by treating the gut, you're improving the lung health. And so
is it conceivable, I mean, hypothetically, that we should be working on our microbiome during this time by taking, for example, healthy probiotics and or prebiotics, foods that are rich in the kinds of fibers that foster a healthy bacterial balance within our GI tracts?
Absolutely. But the first and foremost is diet.
Yes.
All right, because unfortunately, people have, just like other things, they take the lazy way out and they say, oh, I take probiotics.
Yep.
But how's your diet? Okay, so we need to have copious amounts of colored fruits, vegetables, and salads in our diet. It has to constitute a larger percentage than most people are consuming. And clearly, if you're eating a standard American diet, you're not even approaching that.
Mm-hmm.
That correct way of going.
So I know you, and you're a very good chef. And you know, sometimes I see the stuff that you make on Facebook, and it's like fantastic. You can really throw together a wonderful meal. What are some of the things that you're eating during this crisis? I mean, you got a little more time in your hands, admittedly.
No,
you're doing a lot of telemedicine.
Yeah, I actually really enjoy cooking. And so, you know, open up a little bottle of wine and, you know, have a glass of wine and get cracking with some really good food. So
is that for the resveratrol content of the wine? Because resveratrol may have protective benefits.
Well, it's both that and the happiness quotient that goes with
okay.
Not excessive, just, you know. So anyway, you always have to start out with the template of what's the quality of the food that you're buying. Do everything you can in order to consume organic fruits and vegetables. For those of you who have not been embracing that, it might be a good time to. And then you may say, okay, but what about the financial implications? Because the cost of that is so much higher. I want to send you to a website called the Environmental Working Group, or EWG. Mm-hmm. And go take, and they have every year they post what's called the 12 most highly sprayed and toxic.
The Dirty Dozen. Yeah.
The Dirty Dozen vegetables, and then they have the Healthy 15. Right. So if you can at least follow that, you're going to help yourself a lot and understand that the better quality of raw material you're starting with is what you're feeding that terrain. So it's important.
Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this message with you. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with one of my personal solutions to better cardiovascular health, Berkeley Life Nitric Oxide Support Supplements. Just two capsules of Berkeley Life daily provide the dietary nitrate equivalent of 7 ounces of beets and can support cardiovascular health, maintain healthy blood pressure levels, and improve overall circulation. For more information and to purchase, just go to drhoffman.com/berkeleylife. drhoffman.com/berkeleylife. Berkeley Life Nitric Oxide Support Supplements. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. And now back to our guest, Dr. Lauren Marks. This may seem like a minor consideration, but I think it's important in the overall equation of immunity. Is, you know, why buy organic? You know, it's more expensive. We're told to limit our trips to the market, but glyphosate actually has a negative effect on the microbiome. I'm very Absolutely. Convinced of that, and you know, I think you share that view.
Absolutely, it increases permeability of the gut along with a lot of other chemicals. So it's so amazing, Eric. Being conscious and knowledgeable about these things, and I walk into a store, like Costco is not so far from my home, and I'll go in there on a regular time frame, and I look at strawberries, you know, and when they're fresh and they're red and you got this big box of beautiful, and I'm looking at them and I'm going, people have no idea that it is one of the most toxic, highly sprayed fruits that exists out there, and that, it's a misnomer because you're looking at it going, hey, it's berries, it's antioxidant, they taste great, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how important it is to not consume a food of that nature. So I have been cooking a lot more vegetables and salads of various types. I've gotten very inventive with that. But the one thing I want to tell people is, because not everybody's such a cook, is that it doesn't have to be complicated. If you buy good quality ingredients and you'll just spend a little bit of time going online, you can get all of this for free. All right. Buying some fresh organic arugula as a green instead of iceberg lettuce is a huge bump up in the type of greens that you're going to consume. Not that you can't eat all of the others, because they're all terrific, but that's a good one. And you want to buy really good quality extra virgin olive oil, which I know you, Ron, are a big proponent of and you support. I happen to love, I had found a few years ago, white balsamic vinegar.
You're sort of like a Mediterranean diet kind of guy, it looks like.
Oh, I am. Yeah. But, I'm not Italian, but I love Italian food. Yeah, and I've learned to cook a lot of it. And, I put a post out the other day saying, if vegetables are boring to you, you don't know how to cook. because you can. And so I took some sweet potatoes and I bought some organic sweet potatoes. All I did was slice them up long ways. I put them in a big bowl. I put extra virgin olive oil all over them copiously, a little Himalayan sea salt and rosemary, whether it's dried or fresh. And that's it. And then you just take your hands and toss it up and, mix it so everything is well coated. take a baking pan or a baking sheet at 375 to 400 degrees, put it out on the sheet. It takes about 35 to 45 minutes, depending on your oven. And you cannot believe the deliciousness that comes through with eating them. And it's such a robust consumption of beta carotene from a food source, as well as amazingly enjoyable to as consume. Well as
there's even rosmarinic acid from the rosemary, which actually some scientific studies say has antiviral properties. So yeah, really, it's a win-win.
Just absolutely terrific. And people have written to me like in mass and said to me, oh my God, that recipe, it's so simple, but it's so awesome. I've made it three times already, and I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled to share that like that.
Well, that's so, great, anyway. Because, I mean, obviously, you know, I hope that your enthusiasm is contagious. You know, you want it to go viral because, you know, folks, we're locked down, and this is an opportunity to either take, you know, the path of least resistance, which is towards lethargy and poor diet, or to, you know, take the opportunities that we have to exercise, perhaps at home. You know, we're on lockdown. We can't go to the gym. It's, you know, discouraged to run around too much outside. And also, you know, experiment with food. You know, food in most parts of the country is plentiful. It's available. You know, fortunately, thanks to our valiant truckers and grocery employees, you know, we've got food. It's just that we're kind of limited in our ability to, you know, get out and do the normal things we do. What about exercise? Because I think there is an argument to be made that part of that equation of metabolic fitness has to do with exercise, right?
No doubt. And so, you know, look, the gym, I happen to live in a building that has a gym as part of it. And of course, it's closed.
It's closed. Oh, yeah, right. Because it's a communal area, of course.
Yeah, it's a communal area. They shut it down. So I've been like, you know, and I'm a, as most people, we are creatures of habit. And so I was like, well, what am I going to do now? What am I going to do? You know, and I actually had to break my own habit of just saying, well, if I can't go there, I'm not going to do it. Yeah. I go, that's crazy.
You had to figure out a workaround, right? I had to do that too. Yeah.
I only had 10-pound weights in.
Which is kind of wussy. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, for me, that's like ridiculous, you know, but it doesn't matter. So I started to use them. And instead of doing a set of 10, I do a set of 25 until I get a burn in the muscle.
Yep.
And it's funny that you say this today. I'm doing
exactly the same thing. The weights I have in the house are really wussy, but you know, I'm just doing more reps. Yeah.
Hey, you know what? Look, if you can get your heart rate up, you know, even moderately, and you do it for at least 20 minutes is a minimum. The other thing that I do is before I start anything, I jog in place. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is put your sneakers on. It doesn't cost you a nickel. All it does is say, hey, let me just do something here to get my heart rate up, because you want to get your temperature up. You want to get your heart rate up. You need to oxygenate better. You need to get your lungs working better. And so if you just jog in place, even start out just with little toe taps, you know, of doing it and get it going until you feel that your heart rate goes up. And then you could go from that to where you bring your, it would be like you're trying to bring your heel to your butt, right?
Yes.
And you're jumping up, right?
Like high stepping.
Right, yeah. Fox stepping, right? So you're increasing. You will absolutely increase your heart rate significantly. Mm-hmm. If you do it for literally 3 minutes, you will stop, and depending on your level of fitness, you will have some increased respiration. So there's no reason you can't do something like that. I've been doing, you know, sets of 25 push-ups. But you know what? If you can only do 5, then you do 5. Then you do a few sets and take a break in between. So, you know, if your back is okay, you can do sit-ups. It just goes and goes. But anyway, so today I was a little frustrated with not having enough weight of resistance. And so I get water delivered to my home.
Right.
So I had that 5-gallon jug. And I always, when I carry them, they're, oh, they're heavy, you know. So I actually took my scale out today, and I took the 5-gallon jug, and I put it on there, and it was 44 pounds.
Oh,
and it's got a nice handle.
Yeah.
So I took
those
a little.
Kettlebells. It's like a kettlebell.
Yeah. Yeah. So I put my knee on a little hassock, and I took the handle, and I did like rows straight up.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Seated, like a seated row, or
a seated row. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's more than I normally do,
but I have no choice.
So anyway, I got a good workout in, and you know, you can do things like that. Be inventive, you know, just do it. It'll promote so many positive things, and it'll help the neurotransmitters in your brain. So if you're feeling scared, if you're feeling bummed out, do it every day, even if you can't get out of the house. It's a great thing to do. But I just wanted to touch real quickly and, sure. and go back to, you know, our original discussion was, why do some people develop these, you know, fulminant illness with this COVID and others don't? And I said that there's genetic predispositions. And so I found there were three different genes in particular. And we spoke about one, but we didn't say that it was a gene. But one of them is the ACE2 gene. So mm-hmm. it's called angiotensin converting enzyme 2 gene.
Yep.
And the ACE2 gene, actually, there's receptors for it that are actually the doorway for the coronavirus to enter the cell. So if you have too many ACE2 gene, too much ACE2 gene expression, mm-hmm. then you have more susceptibility to contracting the virus. Now, I realize nobody knows that whether you have it or not. Nobody's walking around with an encyclopedia of what's called risk alleles, which is mutations or variances on your genes that you have. But it is one in the scientific realm that could help explain why some people go full tilt and others do not. Mm-hmm. The other one was what's called MX1 gene. And this is what's called the GTPase, all right, which is an enzyme that is responsible for cellular antiviral responses. Hmm. And what's interesting about it is that it's important for the body's response to viruses, and here's the operative term, that it has never encountered before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the things that cause its expression to what's called upregulate. One is benzopyrenes, which is for all you smokers out there, you're getting a boatload of them. Mm. And then you can get it also environmentally from not to stick the word China in there, but like those cheap Chinese wood things that you buy from prefabricated furnitures and so forth. They outgas those kind of benzopyrenes. So those are nasties. And something called LPS, which is lipopolysaccharides, increases the expression of MX1 gene. So the hair again goes back to the gut, because if you don't have sufficient levels of butyrate in your lower bowel or colon, lipopolysaccharides are very important things, and you get them from eating certain foods and certain vegetables. Hmm. So we got the ACE2 gene, we got the MX1 gene, and then there's actually the IL-6 gene.
Yes, the interleukin-6. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right, the interleukin-6, and that's the key inflammatory cytokine that the researchers are looking at right now. Not that it's the only one, but it's the key one that they find that is responsible for the cytokine storm. Again, the immune system is always trying to self-regulate itself, and we're talking about when it becomes over-proliferative, mm-hmm. right? So it is related to respiratory infection susceptibility. So if you have a high level of IL-6 gene expression, then that's another reason for increased susceptibility. It is definitively implicated in cytokine storm, and it is implicated in ARDS, or acute respiratory distress syndrome, which is when people need to be vented.
And the promise there is that we can maybe, in the future, we're not quite there yet, but I think we're beginning to get there, analyze people's genetic makeup and maybe spot these Achilles heels and address them. You know, say you've got, G6PD gene, you know, you take more antioxidants, or you've got the IL-6, and maybe you take anti-inflammatories, maybe more fish oil, or maybe things like SPM, specific pro-resolving mediators. To sort of tamp down the potential for inflammation, there's a whole new world of what we call nutrigenomics that's based on these analyses. And we're just in the infancy of that science. We're actually going to be talking to an expert about that tomorrow, Dr. Sharon Houseman-Cohen.
So, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. That's it. Because what we can, you know, look, the old theory... Forget about the old theory of genetics. We have to go by, you know, genetics and epigenetics, right? Which is what we're looking at now. And in the rationale for doing these things is because we can be preemptively striking, right, in order to protect people's lives. Like, there's a blood test that we do called IGS that is called Integrative Genetic Solutions, and which a part of it, other than all the major blood panels that we do, has a genetic
section.
Yeah, analysis. And that analysis incorporates some very key genetic markers. And in addition, it has what's called pharmacogenetics, which is telling you ahead of time that what is your genetic predisposition to being able to metabolize drugs A, B, C, D. And so they stratify it according to, if it's in the green zone as a class of a compound of medicine, then it's protected, then, standard precautions apply.
This is true personalized medicine. This is true personalized medicine, just because we're really customizing our approach to each patient. It's not a one-size-fits-all approach. Lauren, we're running a little short on time, but man, we have covered a lot of ground. And suffice it to say, I think we've demonstrated that lifestyle, diet, supplements can play a key role in promoting resistance to the worst consequences of COVID-19. And, I hope that, that is going to be borne out by some of the research that's going to emerge from this terrible, terrible crisis.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think the walk away is take care of yourself, pay attention to your health. Don't expect a healthy body if you're not focusing on basic lifestyle mechanisms, and diet being a very, very key player is the big walk away. Dump the chips and eat more fruits and vegetables.
Indeed. All right. Well, also give us a heads up on your website and where people can read your blogs, and also, how do they contact you if they're interested in becoming a patient here in New York City?
Sure. My website is docmarks.com, docmarks.com. And you can call my office, which is 212-333-7300. Reach out to us right now. Even though we're not in the office treating patients currently, we are responding to your phone calls and your emails, and we're here to support you and help you in any way that we can. We wish everybody much health and much love.
Indeed. Yeah. And stay safe, listeners across the country. Thanks so much, Lauren, for joining us today. It was Dr. Lauren Marks. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. As you know, this is a vital time to bolster our immune defenses. I've received countless requests for a specific list of supplements that I recommend to support immune health. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Immune Support Protocol, my supplement recommendations offering the greatest boost for your immune system when it's needed most. Best medicine is preventive medicine. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for more information. drhoffmanstore.com. In addition to the immune support protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links for our supplement starter kit, heart health protocol, and much more. These protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle. The same supplements I take for myself and prescribe for my patients. And for a limited time, you'll get free priority shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.